Hello, and welcome to The Middle. Conversations at the intersection of public relations, journalism, and marketing, where we talk about what's happening behind the scenes to tell and sell stories to audiences in North America and around the world. I'm your host, Sophie Natto, the National Media Lead at Edelman Canada. So, let's get that conversation started.
Go ahead.
President-elect, since you are attacking our news organization, you give us a
chance? I'm not going to give you a question.
Can you stay categorical?
You are fake news.
Sir,
Quiet.
Mr. President-elect.
Consuming news feels like a constant effort right now. The daily drumbeat of accusations around bent truth, misinformation, fake news, and agendas is so overwhelming, it's hard to believe. So in today's episode, The Fight for Truth and Trust, what newsrooms can teach us about earning, keeping, and growing trust. I'm joined by two women who are leading the charge right now. Kathy English has been the public editor at the Toronto Star since 2007. A veteran journalist, she has worked for six Canadian newspapers, launched websites for two Canadian media companies, and is a former member of the faculty of Ryerson School of Journalism. Esther Enkin, with more than 25 years of journalism experience under her belt, has been the ombudsperson for the CBC since 2012. In the lead-up to that job, she helped to shape much of the CBC journalism we know today through a number of roles, including executive editor of CBC News, where she oversaw the job to maintain quality and integrity across all CBC channels. Welcome to you both. What a pleasure to have you both here on The Middle. Let's start with, the most obvious question. The other day, Rudy Giuliani said, truth isn't truth. How on earth did we get here? Esther.
Well, Kathy, how do we answer that question? there are lots of ways we got here, and it's not, in fact, unique. It's just that everything is so amplified. We think that this is the first time this has ever happened. As it happens, I was just reading some World War I history about a particular place in Eastern Europe. And everywhere the journalist went, the rumors were the same, with a slight variation for, whether it was in Lithuania or not. So, see, fake news, Russian style especially, predates all of us. There are several significant changes, and I'm sure we'll peel back some layers on it. One is that there is such a torrent of information that people can pick truth. And the other is we have a significant administration calling into question the fundamentals of the role of the press. How's that for starters, Kathy? Yeah.
I think that's great. It's really important to remember that this whole credibility crisis, a trust crisis, is not new, and the traditions of propaganda that you mentioned are part of it. But I mean, in the 1940s in the US, they had the Hutchins Commission that was set up to look at credibility and freedom of the press issues. Certainly, for as long as Esther and I have been journalists, there have been questions about credibility and trust, and major studies on it. For me, the big factor, though, is the amplification that I really believe social media has changed everything, that the platforms to amplify are something new.
So what damage are you seeing being had or executed on Canadian newsrooms? So because a lot of this sort of pressure and conversation is happening south of the border. Our proximity obviously influences us. But how bad has it gotten in your newsrooms at the CBC and at the Toronto Star?
Well, the environment is fairly toxic, and it's toxic for the reasons that we've already outlined. It's also toxic because economically the model isn't working. There's enormous pressures. There are fewer local publications. We can get into that later. You asked specifically about how it's affecting newsrooms. The speed with which people feel the need to respond, as much as we chant again and again, don't we? First is not good if it's not accurate.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Accuracy trumps it. And the sophistication of fake news is a word that should be banished from
exactly.
The universe.
Exactly. Yes, yes, yes.
Let's banish it from this podcast.
Thank
then forever.
We'll try really hard, or we'll do air quotes, but even that's no justification. the sophistication with which information and platforms are being manipulated. It's not so, I mean, the BBC has been fooled with mirror sites. I'm not sure that we have, you know, it feels benign to say a newsroom has reported the death of someone still alive. God help me, that feels benign next to the misuse of an app like WhatsApp in places like India, which is a primary source of information that leads to death and riots. So when Kathy talks about amplification, it's astonishing. So how does it affect the newsroom? There's enormous pressure, I think, and I think there's a way of shifting this conversation. There's enormous pressure to be fast. It's more enormous pressure to be in that mode, to use those platforms, but to use it in responsible ways. And I see a trend, and Kathy, interested to hear what you think, people like Tom Rosenstiel and others mm-hmm. leading the charge around the role credible and in some ways legacy media is to help people navigate, pardon the expression, the crap mm-hmm. and the garbage and mm-hmm. the manipulation and the incredible sophistication of divide and conquer and of amplifying a message and creating chaos.
Mm-hmm. Like Kathy, you were just telling me before we started recording, our trust data reminds us 63% of Canadians yeah. think newsrooms will sacrifice accuracy to be first and break news and support their business model.
And I think that same slide indicates that 54% believe that we report from an agenda. Mm-hmm. And all of that stuff is stuff that I see all the time. So I just want to go back to the environment right now. And the fact that for the past year and a half, we've had a U.S. president intent on demonizing the media, calling media enemy of the people. And I believe that that has empowered people here who have always sort of, like to trash the media, like to misunderstand, but it has opened the door to that's okay. I went from a point of never seeing that term that we're not going to say mm-hmm. to it coming into complaints to the public editor's office a substantial number of times and reporters
I'd say
are saying
daily
it,
multiple
yeah, daily,
times
yes and
really
people, and the reporters
that's the paradigm and everybody has it mean what it means essentially I once used a cartoon in a presentation I did sorry to cut you off
it's okay.
which was basically daddy what's fake news anything I don't agree with
right
so I put that slide up first and said okay I can sit down now right
oh my goodness so yeah. I didn't realize it was so pervasive there's an ongoing debate on Twitter about how bad is it actually in Canada because maybe we're not in the US and how could it possibly be similar you guys have a quite a bit of room right and oh. in a way that I don't think the New York Times would have or
well or, I mean first of all the people that come to us to me are somewhat in some cases disgruntled they're unhappy yeah. with what they've seen and they're questioning. But the civility has given way to just these accusations of fake news. And sometimes from people who are really intelligent, who you think, you should know better than this. This is not a phrase you should be using. I remember watching the president's first press conference as president when the CNN reporter asked him a question. And he turned to him and he said, you are fake news. And I was sitting in my office watching it. And I knew that things had changed for us and our role and our reporters. So our reporters are feeling under siege. They understand that they have to be better than ever. And what I totally agree with you, Esther, that the idea that what Margaret Sullivan, the former New York Times public editor and now the media columnist for the Washington Post calls the serious press, the serious media has a role to play here in creating a higher level of media literacy. And I'd further go that media literacy now is just, not understanding who a source is and how a journalism operates, but it's also understanding the role of the platforms in amplifying it, understanding how in some ways news organizations have lost the distribution power over their content, that we really need to do more to create digital media literacy.
So Esther, how do you build trust in this environment? Because of course, perfect is impossible. And we simultaneously have journalists, from, for example, the CBC aggressively arguing with people on Twitter about news stories. We see news and opinion mm-hmm. blurring in ways that I think is creating more problems. How do you build trust in that environment?
Well, I think aggressively engaging politicians is what journalists do, but let's leave a lot of specifics because, as I explain to people, the only way I engage in particulars is when I'm writing the review.
Fair enough.
But Having said that, you know, we do bear some responsibility. I think we can still do a better job and have in the past not done a very good job. Truly, you know, there's a bit of an echo chamber around how stories are framed. A lot of it's about framing, and it's becoming more and more difficult to express a range of views that are somehow in the center, because, you know, CBC policy very specifically states that that views, multiple views should be reflected, but based on, you know, their importance or their kind of, you know, how they play out in society. So that fringe views, there may be a time and a place, but the discussion is so polarized, it's hard to find a way to frame a respectful conversation which truly represents a point of view other than your own. And that's a much broader problem than just journalists, but it's an ongoing problem.
Isn't it baked into the formula of news? Sorry to interrupt you, but I mean, conflict, right, and emotion.
Well, yes, to an extent, but I think it's changed enough. And because we have digital platforms and because we have the space and because, you know, breaking news and daily news has so many places where it can live. The serious part of it is for the issues that really matter. I mean, I brought along some of the questions that Tom Rosenstiel thinks that should be very explicitly answered, and sometimes even as a way of framing a question. And it's, you know, what did we set out to answer? What do we know? What don't we know? Which journalists are never good at. What's the evidence? Yeah. Who did we speak to and why? There's a way of deconstructing this and still making it interesting that makes a difference. And I would also observe that Kathy and I are an embodiment of a way of building trust, in that we work for publications, and I use that in the broadest sense, you know, because that's we all are, broadcaster publication, that believe accountability is the price of doing business. And I should also observe in the 70s, after the Jason Blair scandal and the Washington Post version of it, there was a real kind of hand-wringing, oh my gosh, what's happening to the media? That was when a lot of public editors positions were created. Mm-hmm. And the short-sightedness, you know, of there are none left in the States, virtually. There's NPR, PBS, and I think maybe one or two part-time ones.
Small newspapers. There's one out in California and a small paper, but very small, and they're part-time.
You guys are a rare breed then, Kathy.
Yes, we are.
So how are you trying to build trust where you're at? Is this possible? I mean, because this is the dream, right? I mean, I think many of us would love to see solutions-based journalism take over, you know, the news that we're seeing on the daily now. Is that possible at all?
Well, first of all, I totally agree with Esther. It begins with accountability and transparency, and you know, we do work for news organizations, serious news organizations that take those things seriously. And it's deciding, you know, what are the elements that form the basis of trust? You know, I think there's some basic things, that you correct your errors, that you make a clear differentiation between news and opinion. And that's that, I see that all the time, the confusion around that. Among our audiences, that you do strive to present a diversity of views. So, you know, there are some basics, and, you know, obviously that you make clear the difference between news and advertising. What is journalism? What is paid content? So you talk about it constantly. You tell people you should have these expectations of us. You have a right to hold us to these standards. But as you tell the public that, I mean, one of the things I think about a lot is that we can't just say this is what we're going to do. We have to, you know, walk the talk. If we say we're going to do this, we have to do this. And that means, you know, in our roles, we are responsible for holding newsrooms to account for, did you meet the standards we told our audiences we would meet?
And how difficult is that work right now?
I don't see it as any more difficult from the point of view of the standard of the journalism. You know, the sheer volume is enormous. Mm-hmm. What makes it more difficult is what I already referenced. It seems impossible to have a dialogue. I had this incredibly naive, I mean, I used to answer the letters from the other end. I don't know why I did. because the discussion has become more polarized. you know, naive belief that people cared about holding CBC, the Toronto Star, to account because they cared about the quality of journalism. And those people exist. God bless them. And when I get one of those, I am thrilled. But for the most part, it's the cartoon I referenced, which makes it a kind of sad job, except I do take every opportunity to reframe the discussion around this is what journalism is, these are the rules, these are how they were observed or not, and your own belief is one you're more than entitled to.
Yeah.
But its place here is, and so...
I mean, I'm listening to
you. That makes the job difficult, right? That makes the job difficult. I don't know, Kathy, if you find it, find that as well.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I think that I see a lot of complaints that come in that are about gotchas, really just trying to, and it's sort of like trying to win a battle, you know, we treat the people who complain with the utmost respect, of course, and I'm always very polite and kind, and then I can get back some of the nastiest notes from people after I've spent an afternoon, you know, talking to everybody involved, writing a careful response, and, you know, a lot of people just don't want to let it go. And then, of course, I mean, I think the thing, I mean, we're also still journalists. The thing that's made it difficult for all journalists is this is all public now. Everything we do goes out on social media. Every email that goes out of our office, we have to be aware that someone can take that public, and how does that make the role look, our news organizations look? So, you know, I think that there's great care. But I do want to go back to just the thing about, is it difficult to hold journalists accountable? I think that most people don't understand how hard journalists try to get it right.
That's really true.
You know, that no journalist sets out to be unethical or to violate standards. They really try to get it right. They are human. Sometimes mistakes are made. There are a lot of judgments being made in a short amount of time. But journalists basically are striving to serve the public.
There's a lot of righteous anger out there. And in fact, just listening to the two of you talk, I'm realizing I have the CBC and the Toronto Star on a show with no right-leaning newspapers. So I'm preparing myself.
Right-leaning newspapers don't have, and you know, they may serve their audiences very well and a range of you know, standards, but they don't have a public editor or an ombudsman. They don't.
And so regular folks, though, don't have that depth of knowledge. We had Kevin Donovan from The Star, an investigative reporter, a couple of weeks back on another episode, you know, trying to help people understand there are rules, there's a protocol, there's a way that this works. How do then we get past this social media, righteous anger, mob mentality, you know, problem?
Well, I think we just keep doing what we're doing and keep engaging in the dialogue. You know, it's interesting. I'm trying to tell this anecdote so it'll be completely clean of any identification. But I wrote a review having to do with, it was an issue around transgender. And the person who wrote it was, I believe, transgender. And basically, I framed it in terms of journalistic standards and practices, which was, you know, it was completely valid. It was one perspective. Another perspective was always brought forward. It arose out of a legitimate news story of public interest because it's an issue that's very important. And this person wrote back and said, then you change your standards. I'm a person who has suffered from, you know, discrimination. All of which is true, I get to say what's right. So that's something I imagine it may have, and it isn't only in issues of gender. That's, I have had parents who don't vaccinate their children tell me they believe an anecdote in the playground from another parent more than they believe doctors and big pharma, and that is an air quote. Yeah. And so in a world where there's so much information and people have a sense of their own entitlement for sometimes very good reasons. They've been hurt. They haven't had good information. They feel they've been betrayed. But they can find a place now which will validate that view. And again, I'm sure that always existed on some level. We've had cults. But it's the structure. So, I mean, how do we get past it? We keep doing what we're doing. We keep engaging in the dialogue. We create our journalism in the way that Rosenstiel prescribes, which is to be much more open about what we know and don't know and engage the audience and really listen, not in some token way and not the screamers. But I'm going to let Kathy answer them. But I do have one more point.
And I have a question.
I do have one more point about that in terms of who else is responsible. So if we may go back to
Let me forget. So Kathy, so what I'm curious is, because we seem to agree on the journalism practice, and I think the two of you, I mean, you're together, you put, I mean, you have all of the experience in the Canadian media world. I don't even, I shudder to think what will happen when the two of you someday in the future, hopefully never retire. But anyway, what can individuals and businesses, sources and government, what can those actors in the system do to help this work better? Because this doesn't sound like it's working very well right now.
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, like anyone else, they have a right to hold us to account for our standards. They have a right to understand that information has to be evidence-based, and to understand, you know, what when journalists broadcast, print something, what is that based on? You know, one of the first questions I have, if someone, a company, an individual challenges something that's published, the question I would go to a journalist first of all is, how do you know what you have stated as fact? What is the evidence that supports stating that as a fact? So I think that, you know, whether you're dealing with companies, you know, CEOs who might feel that they've been misquoted or that their particular story didn't get out in the way they wanted to, that, you know, start looking at what is the evidence base. But I also think it's really important for everyone to understand that journalism doesn't always tell the story that someone wants told.
And it's iterative. Truth emerges over time. But I'm going to be more provocative than Kathy. You asked about companies and government.
Yes.
They could be more forthright and open and transparent.
Yes.
Big
We agree, by the way.
So how many times have I written either a marketplace or other review in which I have said, it is entirely your right to have decided not to engage in an interview. Mm-hmm. However, the points you raised in your letter of complaint may very well have found their way into the piece. So dialogue by email, lack of accountability, it isn't just the journalists who wear that hat. Mm-hmm. So I honestly believe governments, and I understand, as Kathy says, it's not always the story you want told, and sometimes jobs, you know, whatever, but government and industry and corporations have an obligation also to educate the public about what they do, how they do it, how they come to their conclusions, how they make policy decisions, and on what and it just it's gotten worse and worse and worse. It's a downward spiral of defensiveness.
Our research shows, just to back you up, that kind of behavior builds trust in business as well, and it's great for business. And you are seeing it more and more with some companies, especially in the
That's my cell phone. I'm sorry, I didn't.
Wait
turn
a second,
it off.
Is your cell phone ringing?
Hockey Night in Canada. Hey, I'm a girl that grew up in Montreal. Should we just ignore it?
We should just let it go because that may have been.
I'm totally
the best.
Embarrassed. I didn't turn it off. I was in such a rush when I got in.
Best podcast moment ever.
Yeah. Okay.
Especially
all
with
right.
the CBC Ombudsman.
I love
That's
it.
Right.
You're so on brand, Esther, right now.
Trust me.
Can I put in a plug for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Sure.
I grew up in Montreal. That's it.
Oh, my goodness.
Also, anything else I don't tend to hear, and it drives my family crazy because I never answer myself.
You literally just made my day. I'm just going to say.
She's red. I'm just sinking in my seat. I'll never live that one down.
No, it's a thing of beauty. Cute. I have to tell you, like, you know, I think a lot of people in public relations and in business agree with you. And I think that the more we're able to talk about this at the middle, which is essentially what we're trying to do with this podcast, is eliminate the fear and augment that responsibility to communicate.
Yeah.
Because if you don't talk, how are journalists supposed to understand your version of
the
truth?
That's right. It's a vicious circle, right? And it takes a long time to build the trust. And as Kathy says, if for some reason you don't feel your story was appropriately told, there, well, in the case of our organizations, there is recourse.
Right.
And you can always go above the head of the, but engaging in that dialogue, in that kind of understanding of on every level of how our society works is what we're about.
So I've had examples where from companies that have communications people, spokespeople, who are upset when they're named in a story.
Hello.
Sort of like, well,
kind of table stakes.
Yeah. Was that not your job? And you know, was that not a clear understanding that if a journalist reaches out and the CEO doesn't want to talk and they send a communications person that you're going to use their name? So, I mean, creating a clear understanding of how things work is important. But again, everybody has a vested interest in transparency and getting the facts out on the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what does the future look like? Because at this point in the conversation, I'm quite depressed, to be honest. It doesn't, I mean, you guys see it all on your end. You're seeing all the complaints. Yeah. It sounds like righteous anger is now the new normal and everybody just wants their way.
Yeah,
That's not okay.
The righteous anger, I think, is kind of going to, on some level, become background noise. And there is a beginning of a discussion about how can we make this more civil. There are a ton of not-for-profit and profit fact-checking, mm-hmm. Really interesting, innovative institutions being built. And what I wanted to come back to, so I'm going to get it in now, is that, you know, the Googles, the Facebooks, Twitters of this world have a huge unfulfilled responsibility. Sure. I have news for them. There's no algorithm that's going to do this.
So
they're waiting
they
for the magic bullet. They need to start acting not just as a platform, but as contact providers. I actually did an interview a couple of years ago about should Facebook have an ombudsman right now? And they've gotten themselves into a lot of trouble. Mm. There, you know, the issues of
but they say they're not a media company, as
well. That's exactly what he keeps saying. But you know, and you know, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it is a duck. And they are making fistfuls of money, some of which I'm being a little too blunt. Yeah, I'm a few months from retiring, so I can.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Are you so, really?
Yeah.
Is so, that public?
Fistfuls of money. And they generously also underwrite some really legitimate ways of trying to solve the problem, but they are part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I attended the International Journalism Festival in Perugia, Italy in
April. Lucky you.
Full disclosure, the star didn't pay. This was, those days are done.
No, that's okay.
But this was one of the primary focuses of discussion all week. And there were people there from Google and Facebook and Twitter, and being held to account by a global journalism community for this. Clearly, they are not ready to accept that responsibility. And this is a big discussion moving forward. And I don't even see this as the 5 to 10 years ahead. I think we're there right now, that this is the future of trying to figure out how we work with the platforms, what their responsibilities were. The idea of a Facebook ombudsman came up. You know, Google has its Google News initiative, and you know, they seem to be trying to do more. Yeah. But
Twitter as well, you know, we've learned, you know, Jack just talked about it, transparency as well. Like, they're all faced with the same PR problem.
Yeah, they are. And
it's more than a PR problem. It's a fundamental problem compounded by, you know, the extraordinary, what was the story just recently that, you know, this micro-targeting of certain audiences telling Blacks and other visible minorities not to vote.
I mean, the CBC, though, I mean, the Toronto Star has a lot of half, but the CBC has a ton of half. I mean, you guys could just decide not to put stuff on Facebook until, I mean, don't you have leverage? I don't understand.
Well, you know, I don't think that's fair to single out the CBC in that way, in that CBC has a unique responsibility as a public broadcaster to set standards and to live up to them. Mm. But they also compete in a marketplace, even if they're not for profit. And you need to be where people
That's
are.
That's the point. Yeah.
That's the point, yeah. Right?
I understand. So they were just, your plan is to just keep pushing the tech companies then to sort of meet a more journalistic standard?
That's one piece of it. The other piece of it is all the things we've described around a kind of fluency or literacy. I think, you know, it's an educational process. Can I imagine what it looks like? I think whoever can do that would figure out the model that's going to also make a profit. So I don't think anybody knows. Here's what I hope for, though, that, you know, CBC's role in this country has always been to reflect Canadians to each other, and that, you know, Hockey Night in Canada ringtone aside, it's shared experience, and shared experience is much harder to come by. So I'm hoping we find a way that fosters dialogue and understanding, you know, some even simple things like linking to opposite views and so on.
That's
maybe
great.
Maybe people will take it up, maybe they won't, but a way to really ensure that we have shared experience and actually listen, never mind talk to each other.
What do you think's coming in the future, Kathy?
Well, I think that everything we're talking about is, as I said, that the future is now, that the problems of misinformation, we've been very careful not to use the F news word, and I don't think we should. I believe what Claire Wardle out of the Shorten Center at Harvard talks about. It's misinformation, disinformation, malinformation. They are something unique and individually to them. They are problems, and we are part part of an ecosystem of misinformation right now. And the future is solving the problems of misinformation, and democracy depends on it.
Absolutely.
I feel like at this point we may have to pay charges to play the song twice.
That's right. Yeah. You know, my phone never rings. What can I tell you?
But you've got credit at the CBC, right? We don't have. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
All right, cool. It's been such a pleasure speaking with both of you. Have a great day.
Thank you.
If you'd like to continue the conversation, find us on Twitter. Kathy is at Kathy English, Esther is at CBC Ombudsman, and I'm at Sophie Netto.